Kaurimai, a very warm welcome to you. Cassandra Kyle aho, and this is Safe and Sound, an animal rights show recorded at Free FM in Hamilton and playing right across the country via the Access Radio sector. Our show is sponsored by Village Organics in Frankton, who stock a wide variety of vegan food. If you haven't already, why don't you go and check them out right at the end of Commerce Street there, opposite the Frankton Hotel. Speaking of Access Radio, last Saturday I attended part of an Access Radio conference hosted by Free FM here in Hamilton. I'd just like to give a shout out to the dedicated professionals in this particular broadcasting sector who do such a great job of providing platforms for and training and supporting people like myself, everyday people who want to be a voice for their communities or for their passions or for their causes. In particular, I'd like to acknowledge Phil and Mike here at Free FM, who helped me in so many ways to bring this show to air every single week. I simply couldn't do it without them. Mike in particular often goes the extra mile for Safe and Sound, and I'm very grateful for this. Today our guest is Jan Oliver Lux, or Ollie as he's known. He's a filmmaker, and between projects, he's planning to walk the, I hope I've got the pronunciation right, Te Arawa South Island Trail, in a bid to raise awareness about factory farms and raise money for SAFE. He's already done a little warm-up by walking part of the trail in the North Island, and this was partly to raise awareness about SAFE's campaign to ask people to give veganism a go for the month of October. Try it out for a month. When he walks the South Island shortly, he's just taking a little break for the moment, and then he'll be walking the South Island in a pig costume. So look out for him, and maybe you could even walk a little of the journey with him. We'll go to his interview with Paul Judge in just a moment, but I'd first like to say something about octopuses. I listened to a Radio New Zealand podcast with Professor Peter Godfrey Smith, author of Other Minds, The Octopus, The Sea, and The Deep Origins of Consciousness. A couple of weeks ago, scientists revealed that they found a city of octopuses in Jervis Bay on Australia's east coast. And this was the second city to be discovered recently. The names of the cities are Octopolis, which was discovered in 2009, and now Atlantis, which has just been recently discovered. Now, octopuses were previously thought to be solitary animals, but in these places they were seen living together, communicating, and even picking fights with one another. One of the ways that they communicate, apparently, is by raising their second arm straight in the air, and this was observed on a number of occasions. Octopuses, according to one expert, are the closest we will come to meeting an intelligent alien. Certainly it is hard to think of a body form that is more different from ours, and yet that they are intelligent is beyond dispute. Way back in the 70s, Jacques Cousteau spoke about his interaction with octopuses, stating that they were mischievous, curious, aware, and clever. Octopuses have been observed building dens with scallop shells, as the two octopus cities have these, and they even carry around their shelter in the form of coconut halves that they will assemble together when they want to climb inside. Octopuses have watchful eyes and very complex nervous systems, yet they only live a couple of years at most. After mating, the female goes to great lengths to protect her brood, but when the larvae or the baby octopuses emerge, they just drift away on the current, and almost immediately, the mother dies. So they only live a very short time. So baby octopuses never learn a thing from their parents. They lead solitary lives, but as these cities have shown, they're able to live in social groupings as well. It is thought that they have subjective experience. In other words, it feels like something for them to be an octopus, and they can feel pain and stress and curiosity, alertness, and so on. And there are individual differences between octopuses, which means that the word personality is apt. But do they have consciousness? Are they capable of reflective thought? Can they say, well, here I am. What will I do today? There are some who think they do, And if they do, then other animals no doubt do. And this makes our treatment of other animals, especially in factory farming, even more indispensable. The farming of pigs is a terrible thing. And one of the things that Ollie is doing is to try to raise awareness about the way pig farming in New Zealand is done. I just want to add that it seems beyond a doubt that future generations looking back on our age will think of it as monstrous. And I dare say that the mass incarceration of animals in order for us to eat their flesh or eggs or drink their milk will be seen as almost unbelievable. Our descendants will be shocked, horrified, and revolted. One of the factors driving the shift away from eating animals is the emergence of lab meat. And this is another one of the points that Ollie makes in his interview with Paul.
Today I'm talking to Jan Oliver Lux, Ollie Lux, the filmmaker from Dunedin. Welcome to Safe and Sound and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Paul.
I wonder if you could start by just telling us a bit about your background as a filmmaker. I understand you went to the film school in Otago.
I did my bachelor in film and media studies here at Otago, and then I did a master's in science communication, which is quite a unique degree that I think that not two or three locations on the planet do it, which is just looks at science and how it's communicated to the public and sort of tries to bridge that gap with three different streams, and one of them is documentary filmmaking. And so I did that for 2 years, finishing in 2010.
Fantastic. That's the natural history unit down there, isn't it? What used to be
Correct.
The natural history unit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's run by the university in conjunction with natural history.
And so you got involved in learning how to make a film, and I must say I've watched a couple of your films online, and the cinematography is fantastic. There's a real professional filmmaking feel to what you're doing. I have to say that they must be teaching you pretty well at that place. Or you guys?
I was very lucky to get in, and it's taught by industry leaders. The camera man used to work with David Attenborough. It's a really good degree that I can highly recommend for sure.
Fantastic. And now tell us about your recent activity, which involves a walk on the Te Araroa Trail. You want to just tell us about that?
Yeah, so it translates to the long pathway, which means that it's a walk from Cape Reinga up north to Bluff in the south. About 3,000 kilometres is meant to take between 4 to 6 months, and just over a month ago I pretty much on a whim decided to walk it, because I'm sort of in between projects. I just finished my last film when I'm sort of in development for my next project, and was just going a bit stir crazy in the city. And most people prepare quite a bit for the walk. I think I had 2 hours of prep, realizing that the first week is just walking along 90 mile beach, which is pretty much straight, and I was like, I'll just figure it out while I'm walking. So I just organized my transport up north and bought a sleeping bag and started walking, and decided to do the walk for SAFE and to try to raise some awareness and money for them, because I like what they're doing. I have been vegetarian for 22 years, but I decided to go full vegan for the month of October and maybe beyond to raise awareness for their vegetarian month, which is sort of designed to tell people to maybe give it a shot if they're sort of interested in going vegetarian or vegan, and just showing what you can eat on the trail that
Fantastic.
It doesn't have to be hard.
What's the biggest problem in terms of finding vegan or vegetarian food when you're walking around New Zealand?
It would probably be, there's obviously you're not hitting major cities too often, so quite a few shops that you come across are small dairies, and the range can be limited. So I guess if I had more prep time, I would have dried some fruit and other stuff, and just sort of maybe send some parcels ahead, just so you have something to go to rather than just nuts and fruit. Just range and diversity of what you eat is just limited on the trail.
I guess you'd be calling into those Z stations and picking up those vegan pies. There's a little plug for Z here.
Yep. They're good.
They're really good. I had one today, actually. They've got a new one out. It's vegetable korma pie. Stunning. Tell us about your journey towards becoming a vegetarian.
Sure. So I became vegetarian when I was 12. Mm. Before that, I sort of slowly faded eating meat out. I guess I never had a taste for red meat, and by the end it was just chicken, and then I was just like all or nothing. And at the heart of it was really my love for animals and just the idea of treating others like you want to be treated. And I think once you know what goes on in just the way animals are treated, the ones that we eat, I just couldn't look away. So I just decided to, not eat meat anymore when I was 12. And now, 22 years later, it wasn't no moment where I missed it at all. And trying to go vegan now, which is, just a bit of a change in thinking and taking it to the next step.
It's really interesting that 12, that's quite a young age, isn't it?
To
become aware of that.
I should mention that my dad's German, my mum's Indian, and both of them eat meat, especially the German side. Like, meat is a big part of the diet in Germany, so I was certainly the only one in my class when that happened.
Were you in Germany at that time? When did you come out to New Zealand?
I moved to New Zealand in 2005 to study in Dunedin at Otago. So I was 20 when I moved, and just by myself.
So on this walk, you've been focusing on the welfare of pigs, is that correct?
Yeah, so I'm sort of lining up with one of the things that SAFE is advocating at the moment, which is treatment of pigs in New Zealand, which, a lot of them, the vast majority, are still held in very tiny cages inside and just horrible conditions, really. And it's quite interesting starting the walk, and wasn't hard to reflect on the luxury of being able to walk wherever I wanted to in comparison to that, and even just to look wherever I wanted to. You've got these beautiful sights, and if you compare that to pigs are treated in this country, can't help but feel sorry for them and wanting to make a change. So part of my walk, I decided to walk in a brightly pink pig costume, which will hopefully get some media attention and will be quite uncomfortable for me, I'm sure, but
do
get
this.
The word out.
You're about to embark on this, are you?
Yeah, I'm planning to do the whole South Island in a pig costume.
Wow. You better do it before it heats up too much.
No, it's going to be pretty uncomfortable at times. And it'll turn brown fairly quickly because some parts of the trail are quite muddy.
And a bit of
media attention.
Yeah. How do you hope this to play out in terms of kind of a media attention will you get? What are you communicating about welfare for pigs, improved conditions for pigs?
Yeah, to be honest, on that note, I haven't really studied all the points yet, but I'm gearing up for it. So I can't actually give you any statistics. All that I know is comparing pigs to the way cows live their lives and sheep live their lives, they certainly have it a lot worse, and they're very smart animals, and I guess if you just put yourself into their shoes, I'm sure no one would want to swap their position. And as I said earlier, I just go by the mantra of treat others like you want to be treated, and I don't really see why that needs to stop with animals.
Yeah, because SAFE, I've been advocating for years with the program that was led by Mike King, the comedian. Are you aware of the program that he was pushing, a campaign that he was fronting for?
It was mentioned to me, but I haven't caught up with it yet.
Yeah, really interesting story. He's sort of top-rating New Zealand comedian, and he was advertising pork for the New Zealand Pork Board, and he suddenly had this epiphany. He visited a factory farm, and he had this epiphany, and he went, I can't sell pork anymore. And he just completely switched, and he joined up with SAFE, and he fronted their campaign to raise awareness. And people who, just listening to the show, the farrowing crates are what they put the pigs in when they're having their baby piglets, and they can't turn around or move. Right. They're cramped in there, and the reason the farmers say they have to do it is to stop the pigs rolling onto the piglets and killing them. I think the campaigners were saying that, making the point that actually doesn't actually happen anyway in the natural world of pigs.
Right. Interesting. No, I have to say as well, while I have been vegetarian for 22 years, I've never really spoken out about why I'm vegetarian, or even the fact that I am. I've been quite reserved and quiet and introverted, really, about my stance towards it. And so coming out of that shadow, I guess, is a new thing for me, and I have to start educating myself with the issues so I can actually be a proper advocate for it.
I was just going to say that goes against all the stereotypes about vegans and stereotypes that people have. They tell you straight away that they're vegan or vegetarian. And some of your ideas about where you think we can go, can the culture move away from animal exploitation? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I've been following with a lot of interest the advancements in artificial meat, and there are a few companies in the States, in Silicon Valley, and I think there's one in the Netherlands that are doing a lot of really interesting work on growing meat in labs. As I understand, they still need some parts of animals, but it's just an exciting time, and it'll be interesting to see the next 5 to 10 years and how far that advances. Hopefully gets to a price point where it's competitive with meat that is farmed in the old-fashioned sense and then slowly goes extinct because it can't compete. I think if you start looking into it and how it's made and sort of the advantages that come with it. I think in the long run, that's certainly the way it'll go. So I'm hoping. And there was a really good article in The Guardian recently. Have you seen that one? That talked about that industry and compared it to the atrocities of our times and Holocaust and so on, and how history will judge our times as being lacking understanding of how could we do this, you know, like in 10, 20 years future, hopefully we don't need to treat animals the way we do for meat anymore and
yeah,
this barbaric past. So that's sort of my hope that it'll develop, that we evolve that way.
Really interesting points, have you heard of Yuval Harari, the Israeli historian? He wrote a book, it's been a top seller actually, it's called Sapiens. It's a history of the human race basically, and it goes right back through, you know, the 150,000 years back. It talks about factory farming as being the worst crime of contemporary man, and we will certainly look back on it as a crime. You know, these things are getting voiced in the public domain now, in the mainstream even. So,
right.
Which is that things are looking good, hopeful.
Anyway. And it is ironic just how, you know, the old saying that if slaughterhouses had glass walls, then people would consume less meat, or just sort of the disconnect of the way food is sourced and the consumption of meat. A lot of grey shades, I'm sure. I don't want to make it black and white, but that's sort of something that I'm paying a lot of attention to. And it's not just red meat, it's also, I think, fish products. There's one company at least that's focused on fish, and it's really interesting and quite exciting, to be frank. Like, I think there's quite a lot of financial potential in that, and I think the Chinese government is invested in it, and there's a few meat companies in the States that see the potential of it and are investing in it. So I think we'll hear a lot more about that.
As a filmmaker, have you got any plans to address this material in any of your projects?
Yeah, so my first short film was about seagulls in Dunedin and just the cheeky nature, and partially because it was the course I did, the master's course was primarily about natural history documentaries, trying to capture animals in that time, and it was the seagulls, but I realized how difficult it is to film animals because you need to be really patient and organized, and so everything was at that point where I shifted my focus to more social commentary documentaries and social issues away from animals. I mean, I currently don't have a project on the horizon that deals with animals and animal liberation, but a film like Fantastic Mr. Fox is one of my favorite films that, to me, is a film about animal liberation and something like that that isn't on the nose.
Yes, it's an incredible film.
Captivating narrative, and once you think a bit more about it, you realize, it could be about animal liberation. And something like that, it would certainly be something I'd love to do, but it's not currently on the cards.
You're not documenting your walk in the pig costume?
No, decidedly not. My last two projects were quite personal and had me in them, and I'm sort of stepping away from that to a bit of a break. But as I mentioned, I do want to get some media attention, so whenever I hit, say, Nelson or Queenstown or Invercargill, I'm happy to do interviews and be in the limelight. But if I'm away from hustle and bustle, I'll use my phone just for taking photos, not video.
Yeah, sure. And so you utilize social media, I take it?
Yeah, I'm primarily active on Instagram, being a visual person, and Instagram being a visual platform. I've done a few posts and photo journey along the way. Sort of every 100 kilometers, I shared 10 photos to sum up that part of the track. And I'm just starting to do more on what I eat on the track and how to be vegan in the wild, basically.
Fascinating. So how can people get to see that? They go onto your website and they can get a link through to Instagram?
Yeah, my website has a link to my Instagram. Otherwise, directly on Instagram, you can find me on Jan Oliver Lux.
Okay.
One word. I should mention as well that I'm active on Reddit, which is... Do you know Reddit? I'm not sure how far your listeners know Reddit. It's a website. Basically, it's a lot of forums, and there's one especially for New Zealand topics. So I did a question and answer session on that yesterday on the walk on Reddit. So Instagram and Reddit is probably the two main platforms I use.
Okay, great. Well, look, I want to wish you all the best, Ollie. And
cheers.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to your listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I can... Obviously, we live in a beautiful country, and it took me long enough to get out there and do more walking, and I really regret taking so long. I've been sort of doing a few smaller walks while doing the main big one, one of them being the Hillary Trail on the west coast of Auckland, and that's just a stunner. So just highly recommend getting out there amongst it and doing some walks, and if you're not vegetarian, give it a shot, and there's some great info on the SAFE website if you want to have a go at it, because I need to do some work, but I'm jumping back on the trail in the next couple of months.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, look, thank you so much for being on Safe and Sound, and we'll talk to you again maybe when you've completed your walk, and we'll find out if there's any stories that you can tell us.
Yeah, cool. Cool.
All right, cheers.
All the best.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, let's wish Ollie all the best when he hits the trail shortly to raise awareness for animals. Remember too that if you want to discover more about going vegan for a month and be supported by SAFE, go to safe.org.nz and follow the links there. I'll put up some links on our Facebook page as well, Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast, including some links that will tell you more about Ollie's films. Just to say a little bit more about pigs, the way they're farmed in New Zealand, Ollie and Paul discussed the SAFE campaign that Mike King was the face for, and that was back in 2009. As a result of that, sow stalls are now banned in New Zealand. A couple of years ago, they were finally phased out, and now they're illegal. The sow stalls are where the mother pig was put prior to giving birth, and they were so tight that, you know, her sides rubbed up against the bars and she couldn't even stand up or turn around. They're banned, but farrowing crates, which are only slightly bigger and where she has her piglets for a few weeks with her, farrowing crates are still very widely spread. They're tiny little spaces as well. And then there's the fattening pens, the little concrete pens where the piglets go to fatten up before they're killed. So please go to the SAFE website and read about pig farming in New Zealand. And thanks to Ollie for what he's doing in raising awareness about this. So we'll go out on a track that was chosen by Ollie, and that's called Stork and Owl by TV on the Radio. Until next week, Matiwa, go well. Bye-bye.
Fall from this life, and if you can't see the star, you've probably gone too far. Like the voice that cried on the lonesome tide, like the whale was the only love it ever saw. What's this dying for that asks the stone that soars without high above canyons, mighty walls? I'll say death's a door that love walks through, in and out, in and out, back and forth. Start to dance. It goes, goes, goes.